Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's Ben Ennis. It's Blake Murphy. Now, Blue Jays open up their season on Thursday. And again, for the uninitiated, I will be doing Fan Drive Time 2 to 4 leading into the afternoon game in St. Louis. Blake Murphy will not be here, though. This is your last show of the week. So this is the last opportunity you have to get your takes out. You ready? You ready for like a take explosion over the next 2 hours?
No, because what I have prepared is a bunch of putting you on the spot for takes with homemade over-unders and I mean, we call them over-unders because there's nothing else to call it. It's not a betting thing because I just made them up and I'm not going to take your money. But no, today's all about putting you on, at least this segment is going to be all about me putting you on the spot for calls on tough things about this team.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll find some way to put you on the spot later on in the program.
I already had my big loss.
What was that?
Today, though. Well, we were like kind of half joking, half not joking about how we were set to go 26 for 26 on roster predictions. And now Otto Lopez is headed to Buffalo.
Dude. Okay. So let's start here as there was a little wrinkle of surprise today as Nathan Lucas is the 26th man and Otto Lopez is slated for Buffalo, who opens up their season on Friday, actually, on the road, before returning home to Buffalo. So Nathan Lucas is he's going to make his Major League debut. He's 28 years old, so it's an amazing story, right? Like, that's a great, great, great story. He's a seventh-round pick, career minor leaguer, formerly of the Rays organization, acquired by the Blue Jays, somebody that they put a stake into or had a stake in, considering they kept him on the 40-man roster. But he is left-handed. He does play the outfield, but that's all he plays is the outfield. Doesn't play the infield. Otto Lopez plays everywhere. He's basically split his entire minor league career between being an infielder and being an outfielder. He's right-handed. He's younger. I mean, if you go by stolen bases, they're pretty similar players. I can't tell you necessarily who's faster in a straight line. I would guess the 24-year-old is faster than the 28-year-old, but can't rule it out. But when John Schneider was talking about the difference between the two, it did seem to reference base running a whole bunch today, Blake.
I think that they probably see Nathan Lucas in, and I don't mean this as an insult. It's just for roster construction and role purposes. This year's version of Bradley Zimmer, which was, if you have an outfielder go down or you need a defensive replacement or a pinch runner, who has the most utility in that exact scenario? And it's, I guess, Nathan Lucas over Otto Lopez, because given his track record, his experience level, maybe they believe in his defense at all three outfield positions a little more than Otto Lopez's. And the fact that Otto Lopez adds his additional versatility at second, short, and third positions where they're pretty well covered, having one of Whit Merrifield or Santiago Espinal on the bench at all time or at most times, and Kevin Biggio in the mix as well. Like, maybe they feel pretty comfortable with the infield versatility and depth there. The big thing that this tells me is that with the righty-lefty dynamic, they don't see this spot getting a lot of plate appearances.
No, that's it. That's where I was going to go, because, hey, Otto Lopez, maybe he'll become an everyday player, but to me, in my mind, the Otto Lopez scenario for a long career is as this, as a 26th man. Maybe there's a chance that he's an everyday player somewhere. Hey, the Pirates are always on the lookout for crappy guys. No offense to Otto Lopez, but like guys that are not MVP candidates that can play every day.
They're fungible. They're malleable pieces. And like the Pittsburgh Pirates have the like non-competitive version of Tampa Bay Rays brain,
yeah,
which is that it's more important to be bad at multiple positions than good at any one position. That's not fair to Otto Lopez. He's, I think, a plus defender at two infield positions at least, and that gives you confidence what third base would look like, what a corner outfield would look like. I just think they're looking at, and to tip my hand on one of the props that I'm going to throw your way in a little bit here, Bradley Zimmer had 101 plate appearances last year, and he got into 100 games
That's
with the Jays.
Too many.
100 games he got into and had 101 plate appearances. If you were going to come up with a scenario in which the 26th man is going to appear in 100 games again and basically never hit, then Nathan Lucas makes a little more sense to me. I still don't really see where he's going to get his reps in. Like, this to me, maybe Kevin Biggio playing right field when George Springer gets DH days is not going to be a thing as much as I had anticipated. Maybe the days George Springer is DHing, Nathan Lucas fits in as a defensive replacement a little bit more, filling in for a Biggio and right, or if it's a Whit Merrifield and left day because one of Varsho or Kiermaier are getting the day off. I don't know. I guess this also prevents you from being tempted to use Kiermaier and Varsho as defensive replacements on their days off as you look to maybe make sure a Kiermaier stays healthy over the long run.
I guess. I mean, they're much better defenders than Nathan Lucas. I mean, I don't think I'm speaking out of school there on Nathan Lucas. To me, this reeks of, hey, 28-year-old guy making his major league debut is going to be pleased as punch just to sit at the end of a bench for, like, days on end. And, yes, Otto Lopez would have been the same, but maybe it's better to have the 24-year-old playing more often than the 28-year-old who doesn't have a – yeah, the Nathan Lucas – this is the pinnacle of Nathan Lucas-ness, I think we can safely say.
Yeah, like, the what is the absolute upside? Someone gets hurt and he works his way into a platoon situation because he hits enough and is enough of a – you know, you're get ready. You're going to hear a lot about how he's just a ball player. Yeah. And like, there's no standout skill, but he's been really solid everywhere he's gone. Mm-hmm. And I do feel for a guy like that because it's, you know, it's sometimes difficult. Like, you're not even necessarily a quad A guy because you've never gotten the opportunity mm-hmm. at the major league level. And I go back and forth on this sometimes with basketball a lot, right? Like, what is going to get a guy from the G League to the NBA? It's not scoring 20 points a game. It's doing one thing particularly well that gets your foot in the door, whether that's three-point shooting or defending or whatever. But also, if you are just like this super well-rounded guy, you are probably a better player than a lot of the guys that are going to get called up ahead of you because you don't, you know, have that one skill standout or whatever, that one thing that's getting your foot in the door. Now with Nathan Lucas, maybe he's defended well enough and run the bases well enough in camp that they see that as a one skill. Mostly I'm happy for him.
Yeah, that's a cool story.
I'm not thrilled to be wrong about the Otto Lopez thing. I think it does make more sense for Otto Lopez to continue getting developmental reps.
Sure.
But yeah, Nathan Lucas, you know, it's nice that a guy who's just solid all around is getting a shot here instead of a pure specialist.
He had a chance to crack this roster last year too, and Gosuke Kato was the 26th man, and you know, he did some things. He appeared in some games for the Blue Jays, and then off he went.
That's the other thing to remind yourself with all this is that Gosuke Kato opened the year on the roster last year. Tyler Heineman and Zach Collins played games in April.
Yeah.
Taylor Saucedo was on the opening day roster. All of this is temporary. And I don't mean that existentially, but I do mean that existentially as well. Like everything is fleeting. It's honestly remarkable though, that the Jays have gotten through, and we talked about this yesterday, but the Jays have gotten through spring training healthy enough that this is the only kind of surprise or wrinkle on the opening day roster. Like everything else. And if you're looking for where there could be turnover in the coming days and weeks, like maybe the Nathan Lucas spot, maybe the Zach Pop spot, but barring an injury, like I don't know that we're going to see the Gosuke Katos and Taylor Saucedos and Tyler Heineman of the world in the early parts of the season, like knock on wood. But yeah, last year those roster spots churned because there weren't good players in them.
Yeah. Now there's a full, like, I mean, yeah, the 25 guys that are on this team, there are backfilling major league caliber players if somebody gets hurt right now, and maybe Nathan Lucas is among them. If not, it's a great story anyways. Shout out to Nathan Lucas, 28-year-old rookie.
All right, last thing on Nathan Lucas. This is the first of your props and over-unders.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
So these are all made up by me, and they're just kind of the actual answers don't matter so much as the discussion around them. But we'll close the Nathan Lucas one with this. Last year, Jay's 12th and 13th roster spots, position player spots, combined for 507 plate appearances. Now that's across Whit Merrifield, Bradley Zimmer, Jackie Bradley Jr., Zach Collins, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley Zimmer had 101 plate appearances and got into 100 games. Over under 99.5 Nathan Lucas plate appearances this year.
Under. I really do think under. I mean,
less of a role than Bradley Zimmer.
Yeah, Well, again, like Bradley Zimmer was an elite defender on an outfield that didn't have elite defenders. George mm-hmm. Springer was the best they had, and that's saying something, and he's now a right fielder. Blue Jays went out and got two upper echelon defenders in center field, and only one of them's playing center field. The other guy's in left field. And I think the platoon thing matters here. Like, there's, on occasion, you're going to see Dalton Varsho and Kevin Kiermaier not in lineups against lefty starters. You're not going to see Nathan Lucas in those lineups where there's lefty starters. I really do think this is a nice little story. We probably spent 7 minutes too much talking about Nathan Lucas. I just don't see it. I see it as a nice little thing. And maybe the pinch running for Alejandro Kirk late in games, or Brandon Belt, like that's his role on this team. And I guess that means that he's faster than Kevin Biggio, who has held that role for, I do not see it. Honestly, Bradley Zimmer made more sense for that team last year than Nathan Lucas makes sense for this team this year.
The Biggio point's interesting, because I do wonder if this, like, obviously it affects Otto Lopez in the sense that he now lives in Buffalo instead of Toronto and isn't getting the major league paychecks. It kind of does seem like Kevin Biggio is the short stick in terms of how the playing time or Nathan Lucas's path to playing time could shake out, because I had kind of mentally prepared for Kevin Biggio to be the extra outfielder against right-handed pitchers or when George Springer needs a DH day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see who gets those starts. Like, that is really interesting. If they lean into the whole modus operandi for the Toronto Blue Jays this offseason was improving outfield defense. I guess you lose less if you go from, you know, one of those great elite defenders in left field and center field to a guy who is apparently capable of playing center field in Nathan Lucas than you do to Kevin Biggio, who can play a corner outfield spot admirably well, but certainly you don't want him in center field. And I don't think anybody's talking about him winning a gold glove in the outfield anytime soon.
Yeah, going from half a center fielder to three, potentially four center fielders in the mix is a pretty nice thing. And you don't have to do there should be no scenario this year where we have to pretend Whit Merrifield can maybe man it or Otto Lopez is actually playing out there. Okay, I want to get back to the outfield defense, but very quickly on Otto Lopez. There are only three players as far back as we have service time data. There are only, which is not very far back, so bear with me here, but there are only three players who have as much service time as Otto Lopez and fewer plate appearances. He's basically the king of, when he gets called up, not being used at all. 11 plate appearances over 45 days of service time. How many plate appearances does he get this year?
Holy cow. How many plate appearances does he have in his career? He
11 has at the major league level over 45 days of service time.
Okay.
More or fewer than 11. This
oh
year.
Well, more. I okay. would say more. Yeah.
How much more though? Because this is rare air for not being used.
Yeah, I like Otto Lopez. I mean, the fact that there's so many outfielders on this team already ahead of him. I mean, it would take a number of injuries too. Like, I think maybe if we set the over under at 100 plate appearances would be pretty good for Otto Lopez, mm-hmm. I think.
And again, the Jays last year, 12th and 13th roster spots, you sum up all those guys who took up those position player spots, over 500 plate appearances. So if we're already saying 100 for Nathan Lucas, 100 for Otto Lopez, maybe 100 for 150, 200 for Kevin Biggio, you've still got some to sprinkle around for the Vinny Coppers of the world,
right,
who get called up and we don't expect it. Okay, back to the outfield defense then.
Okay.
Last year, by outs above average.
Yeah.
The Jays were the number 18 outfield defense. They're -3 outs above average defensively. Dalton Varsho was number one in the entire league.
Yeah, he's really good.
+18.
He's not playing center field
either. Kevin Kiermaier was only +1, but the year before that, he was +12.
Yeah, he's coming off the hip injury. Looks pretty good in what I've seen out of spring.
George Springer, probably better in right than center. On top of which, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Teoscar Hernandez combined to be -6 outs above average.
Yeah.
Are the Jays a top five outfield defense this year?
Oh, I think it's like an outright disaster if they're not.
Okay.
Like that is the goal.
You want to go top three? You want to go top one?
Buddy, like you just said it. They acquired the guy, the Mr. Defense guy that nobody saw because he played in Arizona, but they acquired the guy to play the most premium outfield position, except he's not playing that position. He's playing in a corner outfield spot. Like, I don't know how a right-handed hitter putting a ball in the air and pulling it is going to get a base hit in Rogers Center. It's going to be extremely, extremely difficult. And then George Springer, I mean, is, I think, still a capable defender in a corner outfield spot. No, this is a team that better be an elite, elite defensive team in the outfield. And could they be the number one defensive outfield in baseball? Yeah, I put it within the realm of possibility. But anything outside of a top five one would be, I think, a pretty severe disappointment.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It better be. I thought five was a good talking point. Because, you know, if you're like, will they be the best defense, best outfield defense, that's a little high. And, hey, number one's open because it was the Diamondbacks last year and they lost Dalton Varsho.
So, there you go.
The Astros and the Padres were next up there. I think those teams will probably be pretty solid defensively. Again, last one on the batter side for now. We debated this last week, how the playing time will shake out between Whit Merrifield, Kevin Biggio, and Santiago Espinal. Keeping in mind that one of those guys will start at second. One of them could see starts in left field. One of them could see starts in right field. Espinal is nominally the guy who would play short and third if Bo Bichette and Matt Chapman needed to miss time. What order do they finish in for plate appearances?
Oh, Whit Merrifield, number one with a bullet. I think, again, if it were up to me, he'd be the everyday second baseman until he proved that he wasn't capable of being the everyday second baseman. And then I think depends on the deployment of Santiago Espinal in the outfield and what the decision making process is there. But I could see a world in which Kevin Biggio has more plate appearances than Santiago Espinal. But I think both guys will pale in comparison to the playing time that we see Whit Merrifield get.
Post trade deadline last year, Merrifield 130, Biggio 120, Espinal 109.
Yeah,
very, very close,
dude. This is it, and I know you get stuck in the lasting memory of Santiago Espinal taking the second base job away from Kevin Biggio at the beginning of the year and having some big hits late in games.
All star,
dude. He was an all star and deserving. Like he's a winning player. I like to describe a guy like him he's a winning player. Plays great defense. And he can put together a decent plate appearance. And you know what? Mash is lefties too, which they're going to need guys on this team to do. But yeah, I still, even in Kevin Biggio's down years, this guy is a capable on-base threat. And I think you're going to see more than your fair share of Kevin Biggio this year.
Yeah, he's like a baseball cockroach. Every time you think you got rid of him. Not to be mean to him. He's obviously a capable
Kevin
player.
Kevin took no offense to that, I can tell you.
All right, let's look at the bullpen because I wanted to do some starting pitching stuff, but something that's made finding, obviously I can look it up guy by guy and count and I know who's a starter and who's an opener, but when you're trying to quickly quantify who used the most different starting pitchers last year or how many starting pitchers did the Jays use last year compared to other years, the existence of openers makes finding those things very annoying. Sorry to remind everyone, Anthony Bonda started a game for the Blue Jays last year.
What a nightmare.
Starting pitching does not mean quite the same thing. So we'll start in the bullpen here. Last year, Jordan Romano was very, very clearly their best reliever and was used in the most high leverage situations. There was a huge gap between him and everyone else in terms of what leverage John Schneider and before him, Charlie Montoyo used their relievers in. Jimmy Garcia was actually number two in average leverage index when he came into the game. Who is second to Romano in leverage usage this year? Who's your, if not eighth inning, your fireman guy? You got a couple guys on base, 2, 3, 4 in the order coming up, and you're not ready to go to Romano yet. Who's that guy?
I guess you can do the recency bias thing and say Zach Pop because, you know, they're talking about him being just...
You see him against the Yankees on Sunday? If you want to do real recency bias?
Yeah, I guess you could say Eric Swanson's strikeout capable arm is something that the Blue Jays will be looking for a bullpen that lacks swing and miss. You know what? I'll go with Eric Swanson because not unlike the Nathan Lucas thing, which part of it has to be that the organization went out, acquired this guy and protected him by putting him on the 40-man roster. And you know, part of the reason I think he's making the opening day roster is because there's been some investment in him, as tepid as it may be. I think the same exists with Eric Swanson, that you want the guy that you traded for a silver slugger to be doing more than showing up in a 5-run game in the 6th inning.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would pick Swanson over the course of the year. I think it might be Anthony Bass to start just based on Schneider's trust tree down the stretch last year, but you can only really use him against righty-heavy stretches of the lineup. Don't think you want him facing tough, tough lefties still. So that'll be, and I think what this highlights is that as deep as this bullpen is, yes, Jay Jackson on his split contract, he's back.
Yeah.
Arden Zwelling reporting today that Jay Jackson, who was granted his release per the terms of his contract, is back on the... back in the mix with the Blue Jays. He'll be paid, I think, a prorated $1.4 million for the days that he's in the majors, and then a different contract in the minors.
for his AAA days.
Yeah, so a little better than a standard minor league contract with major league option. But you won't see him initially. You won't see Nate Pearson, Yosef Arzulueta, all those guys, because this is a deep bullpen. But I think what this question highlights is that come trade deadline, I think we're still probably talking about getting another elite back end arm.
Yeah. And that's the nature of bullpens, is that they all kind of look half decent most years going into game one of 162, but relief pitching is volatile, and year to year, individually and year to year team wise. And it's always something you're looking to beef up at the deadline.
Relief pitching is so volatile, in fact.
Oh.
That
what?
Only four Toronto Blue Jays have ever recorded 100 saves. Jordan Romano's at 61. That's a stretch away still. He's got 59 over the last 2 years. The four who have reached 100 are Hanke, Ward, Osuna, and Koch.
Yeah.
So that's the top four. Koch had 100 exactly. Osuna had 104. Casey Jansen had 90. Mm. BJ Ryan had 75. Mm. That's the top six. Jordan Romano enters the year with 61. Where does he finish the season on the all-time list? 39 saves would tie him with Koch for fourth. 29 would tie him with Jansen for fifth. 43 would get him to Osuna.
It's just too many numbers. I think the Blue Jays are going to win more games. And yeah, you would like them to win more by a larger margin. That's not generally the way that works. So I would say, what did he have, 36 saves last season?
Something like that.
All right, let's put him at 39. So what, fourth all time?
39 would tie him for fourth. That would get him to 100 right on with Billy Koch.
I give Jordan Romano 39 saves this season, tying him with Billy Koch.
There you go. The old Billy Koch goatee, now replaced by the septum piercing.
Yeah, hopefully when Jordan Romano's Blue Jays career is over, it ends in a better fashion than Billy Koch bringing, like, I don't know if you remember, in spring training, he was cut from the Blue Jays. He brought, like, a school team to one of the spring games that he thought he'd be pitching in, and instead he was no longer a member of the Blue Jays, but the kids got free tickets anyways.
Okay, last one in the bullpen. Nate Pearson, over under 24 and a half major league innings.
Dude, I don't know how you can watch the career of Nate Pearson and say over.
That's a low bar though.
I'm gonna do the limbo underneath that number. Okay. Like, I wish him the best, and obviously the most optimistic projection now is of him as a high leverage reliever in one, maybe two inning stints. But man, you can't. Like, it's no fault of his own. The injuries have been a part of it, but it's just, there's no way anybody would put any amount of money on the over for any innings mark with Nate Pearson.
All right. A couple quick hitters.
You're not going to. Are you not answering some of these?
I answered some of them. But, like, I set the line. So it's awkward for me to be like, I set this line and I picked this, because I should have set the line higher, technically, if I'm picking over or lower. This is why I wanted to do this one with a third person. Okay. Stolen base attempts in spring training around Major League Baseball were up about 43%.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to Mike Petriello yesterday. He agreed with me that maybe a 20% increase is more reasonable to expect from teams. Last year, the Blue Jays attempted to steal 102 bases. 20% increase puts them at 123 for this year. Higher or lower?
Higher. I really do think this team is going to try and steal bases. Kevin Kiermaier, as long as his hip is feeling good, I think he's going to steal some bases. I think there's real team speed here. I mean, despite the weirdness with Bo Bichette's caught stealing stuff recently, like, I think he's going to be a little more active on the base pass. I think they're going to be a team that doesn't just go station to station. I think they're going to, I mean, they're not going to be the highest stolen base threat team in Major League Baseball, but I truly believe that's going to be a weapon that's going to be utilized by the Blue Jays this year.
I agree, and I hope you're correct, because it's very fun. It's way more fun to watch. Okay, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., 166 WRC plus in 2021. That kind of takes a bunch of league and environment factors and tries to put everyone on the same scale. That was down to 132 last year. The midway point of those is 149. Mm-hmm. Higher or lower?
I hate being in the role that I am, and it's self-imposed, but as, like, the Vlad expectation temperer. But honestly, outside of the beginning of the 2021 season, where the Blue Jays played in some, like, of the all-time most hitter-friendly environments in the history of baseball, we've seen Vlad be a good hitter. Like, bordering on very good, but not great. So I would take the under. Like, I think he's
going to be better than he showed last year, which is still super valuable. And this taking, like, maybe, and you put it in, what'd you use, RC Plus?
WRC Plus.
WRC Plus. So yeah, that'll take into account or where OPS offense is plus, and yeah, whatever. So like the counting stats may be higher this year. He may have like a close to 900 OPS, but yeah, I haven't seen it for enough time from Vlad to say that he, you can put him into that top five offensive player, pencil him in year after year.
Well, we'll talk to Kayla McGrath in a bit, who feels more optimistic about Vlad. Maybe one of her bold predictions had something to do with a nice round number of home runs for Vlad. Okay, same question with Brandon Belt, but in his case, the midway point between his last 2 years is a 126.
Oh, yeah. I like Brandon Belt a lot this year. Like, I think everything we've heard from him, and I know that the spring is all about, hey, guys being in the best shape of their life, but yeah, he exited the season last year from the Giants thinking that his career was over and had the surgery and all of a sudden says, I feel 100%. Like, there are no excuses for me.
Well, he was going to retire if he didn't feel 100%.
Dude, and then 2 years ago, like, yeah, look at what this guy has done prior to the last, to 2022, where he was injured basically start to finish. This is a guy that is not that far removed from being an elite offensive weapon.
In 2021, he was basically 2022 Brandon Belt terms of offensive production.
And not in a full season either,
no.
Right?
Okay, last one before we take a break and talk to Caitlin. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Alek Manoah, Bo Bichette, over under 0.5 contract extensions by the end of, like, the World Series. So if the Jays get eliminated early and get their work done earlier, like, by the time the World Series ends, over under 0.5 extensions.
I think under. I think they're going to at least attempt to extend all three. And obviously the clock not ticking as much on Bo, despite the fact that, yeah, the team control thing is still the same. But, yeah, his number is locked in, and you're probably going to wait a little bit longer to ink, you know, a decade-long extension beyond that with Bo Bichette. I mean, is there a history of this team doing in-season long extensions with their prospects? Like, it doesn't feel like it, so I'm going to say under.
Yeah, there's not really, but there's also no history of having, you know, Alek Manoah and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette. I'm going to take the over. I think a Manoah one gets done. I that's not based on anything other than, you know, I think the language around him getting the opening day start and the whole let's make this a regular thing. And I don't know. I'm feeling rosy about Alek Manoah and the Toronto Blue Jays.
Except he's done the Bo Bichette thing and decline every.
Yeah, but Bo Bichette signed a 3-year deal.
No, it's true. It's true. We'll see.
Rafael Devers basically was like, okay, I'll sign my 1 year and I'm out of here. And then they worked out a huge extension. Here's the thing. And this is the thing with Brandon Belt's knee health and retirement as well, is that there's always money.
Money is important. All right, that was great. Good stuff, Blake. Well done. By the way, I didn't compliment you on your shirt today, your baseball reference tee. That's a cool one. I need to get myself one of those.
Yeah, they sent them to me. Here's the thing. You're a stats nerd online long enough.
Really? Is that what happens?
Well, no. It's not like you're an influencer. It's just like you get to know these people because you're constantly like in their DMs being like, hey, can you add this? Can you add this? Can you let me search by service time so I can figure out if Otto Lopez is the least used 45-day service time guy ever? And then, yeah, you bug them for a shirt. I don't know.
Wow.
I have a baseball prospectus one too.
Dude. No, that's next level baseball nerdery. Well done. Congratulations on that. All right. When we come back, we'll talk to Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic. Yes, spring training officially completed today in Clearwater. And Blue Jays opening up their season on Thursday in St. Louis. That's next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy. Saturday, February 25th. The Blue Jays went down to Bradenton to play the Pittsburgh Pirates, where they defeated the Pirates 9-7 in their first Grapefruit League game today in Clearwater. They lost to the Philadelphia Phillies 6-5, wrapping up their Grapefruit League campaign at 17-15. Now we play for real starting on Thursday in St. Louis against the Cardinals. Let's talk to Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic. Hey, Caitlin, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. How did you experience this year's spring training? Because, yeah, man, like it's been pointed out by many people. There were not a lot of spots up for grabs and, man, kind of perilously few storylines.
Yeah. As a writer, you don't love it. But I see why the team, you know, was happy with the way their spring training went, because it was really smooth sailing from, like, the beginning. There was maybe the minorest of minor scares there in the middle with Vladdy's knee. But I think right off the bat, it was pretty clear that it was minor. Obviously, he had to miss the WBC, which was unfortunate for him. But in terms of, you know, his injury or whatnot, it obviously wasn't serious enough to keep him out of the season. So that's good. And, yeah, like, everything that kind of happened was more or less sort of expected in a lot of ways. Like you said, there was not many jobs up for grabs. Maybe in theory the fifth starter was, but that kind of became pretty apparent even right off the top that it was going to be Kikuchi, just because of the other guys maybe weren't quite ready and they weren't ready, really a fit. So, you know, he's obviously the fifth starter. Maybe a bit of a surprise today with Nathan Lucas getting the 26-man job. And not surprising. I mean, I guess it was really a kind of a toss-up between him and then Otto Lopez, and Vinny Capper was in that mix too. And obviously it goes to Nathan Lucas, which is nice for him because he's never been to the major league. So that'll be a first for him.
So what do you think went into that, Caitlin? I know we run the risk of over-discussing the 26th roster spot, but it is a minor surprise in that Otto Lopez got lots of good buzz early in spring training, obviously had a nice showing for Canada in the World Baseball Classic. He is a little younger, so I'm sure the time in Buffalo won't hurt. But what do you make of the decision to go with Lucas and what his role could be out of the gate?
Yeah, I mean, a few things that come to mind with that. One, Lucas is a true outfielder, and I think that helps the Blue Jays with their depth there. Obviously, they have there's three starting outfielders, and then they have Biggio and Whit Merrifield that they can mix in there. But Lucas is an outfielder. You know, he can play center field. He can play all three of those positions really well. So I think they really like his outfield defense, especially like late in games, you know, if they need it. He's been putting up really good at bats, and they've liked that. They like his speed on the bases. I think they just kind of like the way he plays. He kind of characterized it like he grinds up there. I think they kind of just like it. You mentioned Otto Lopez is a bit younger. I also look at Nathan Lucas, and it's like, we know last year he was basically like the last cut of spring. I mean, he had a great camp last year when he came in with the Blue Jays. Just didn't quite make it. Had a really good season in AAA, and it felt like the Blue Jays at times in the year sort of thought about calling him up, and it just never happened. So I think there's probably a little bit of thinking like, this dude has kind of earned his spot. Like, let's, you know, he's been with our organization 2 years. He's showed up for camp 2 years in a row and put a really good performance together. Like, let's reward that. So I think some of that's like my thinking is like, that's how I'm kind of thinking of it. But yeah, I think like position wise, it makes a lot of sense to have that extra outfielder, true outfielder. In terms of his role, I mean, it's probably going to be pretty minimal. I think John Schneider, when he's talked about it, it's like talked about it as like a complimentary role, definitely to start. And then you think about Otto Lopez, maybe you don't love a guy that's still developing, sitting on the bench so much. So maybe there's some of that going into it that they'd rather have him at AAA, just playing more games.
Yeah, I mean, we think of these roster battles and sports just in general as this meritocracy, and it is and should be for the most part. But, like, I honestly don't have a problem with the 26-man, you know, the human element being a part of this, that it's cooler to have a 28-year-old rookie make his major league debut in a guy that's not going to see much playing time anyways. It's not like he's a bum, right? Like, they know he's a capable player. I don't have an issue, Caitlin, with that coming into play, being a factor that Nathan Lucas made the team over Otto Lopez.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I mean, we all know that the opening day roster sometimes is set for like a day and then it changes. It's really not anything set in stone there. So Otto Lopez will contribute to the Blue Jays plenty this year. So will Nathan Lucas. So will Vinny Capra probably at some point. Like, it obviously takes a lot more than 26 players to get through the season. So I think all those guys and more guys that we saw throughout spring are going to contribute this year. So I do think it's kind of nice to have a guy like Nathan Lucas who has, you know, grinded this last couple of years in the minors, his whole career in the minors, and have him get a chance to make that debut in St. Louis.
Nowhere is that turnover more present than in the bullpen usually. And the Jays have a pretty solid and deep looking bullpen here, but we, I think, have a pretty good idea who the first man up might be. And I know people might want it to be Nate Pearson still, or Yosfer Zulueta prospect type, but the Jays granted the release to Jay Jackson and then brought him back into the fold. You and Arden Zwelling were both reporting on this today. What was the situation with Jay Jackson for people who haven't been able to keep up with it? And I would you expect him to be probably the first relief arm up?
Yeah, I mean, the first relief arm up is always, it's probably going to be kind of a competition. Like with Pearson, the message to him was kind of force our hand here. Like, I think in the case of Pearson, it's kind of in his hands a little bit. Like, if he's really pushing his way up, they'll reward him for that. But I do think having a guy like Jay Jackson, who's obviously really experienced, he had a really great camp. He really seemed to connect with the Blue Jays, just both as a player in that room in the clubhouse with the other guys, but also just as an organization, you know, what they're going for. You know, I know he's a little older and he's at that point of his career where he really wants to be on a contending team, be in a place where there's a chance to win. And so I think that, you know, he'll probably factor in a lot this year, you know, and I think that probably the deal isn't totally all the way official yet, but I assume it will be soon, and then he'll start in AAA. And as you say, like, I think that he'll be in the mix at least to be the first guy up. I don't know definitively if he will, but I would say I would be surprised if he was.
Kaylin, one of the things that we can't gather being in Toronto and watching these games on television from Florida is this apparent attitude change, the more professional attitude, whatever you want to call it, around this team. And I guess maybe it started when John Schneider was brought aboard. I mean, he was already on the coaching staff, but made manager midway through last season. But it's been a common refrain, and it's been written about a couple of times. Having been down there, can you quantify it? I mean, it's so difficult to, it's not like you can put a number on it, but can you speak to what that means for this team?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I've been asking guys about that a lot this spring because, as you say, it has been a storyline. I mean, I think it's things like, for example, you know, I've been talking to some guys this last week, you know, asking them kind of exactly what you asked me, like, what do those little things mean to you? Like, where are you noticing the difference? And a lot of them pointed to a play a couple days ago. It was in left field, and Varsho, you know, hit the cutoff man with that Chapman there, and then he threw to home, and they got the out. And I think Manoah was really celebrating. And it was like a play like that where I think earlier in the day they had practiced relays and cutoffs. And it was kind of about that. It's like it's a spring training game. You could get away with maybe not hustling there, maybe just letting the run score. But it was kind of doing those plays exactly right. It kind of stands out. And that's like sort of the intensity that they've been approaching, practice, drills, all this kind of stuff. It's really, they kind of know they're a good team. They know they're a great team, but they also know what separates great teams from championship teams often is, you know, not letting that run come around to score. It's, you know, it's hitting the cutoff man. It's hustling. It's taking the extra base. It's all these things that really make a difference for a team. And so I think it's just that heightened intensity, but also just kind of like soaking in that knowledge of this actually truly will make a difference. Like, maybe it doesn't seem like it, but you know, you save one run or two runs and it adds up to maybe an extra win a week, and then adds up to a couple extra wins a month, and then those extra wins might be the difference between a division and a wild card.
How does Don Mattingly fit into that and becoming more that team?
Yeah, well, I think that he obviously his experience, and I think guys have been leaning on him for, you know, guidance a lot, just talking to him about, you know, what he's learned in the many years that he's been in the game. And I do think he brings a certain intensity. I mean, I wrote a story about Don Mattingly that went up today, actually, and I was talking to Simber about it. Simber was with the Miami Marlins when Don was the manager there. And, you know, he was saying that, A, he really connects with players. He really cares about them. In fact, Simber was telling me basically his first bullpen, Don Mattingly was standing in there, like, just because Simber was practicing throwing to lefties. And so, you know, Don was standing in there telling him throw inside. So he really wants to get in there, have like a hands-on sort of style as a coach and as a manager, but he was also saying that, like, he's really good about creating a loose environment, also, like, kind of letting them know when they need to get their work in or when they're not putting their work in. And so I think that I wouldn't go so far as saying, like, Don can be, like, the bad cop or anything like that, but I do think that he can bring a little bit more of that, like, professionalism, that maturity, that reinforcing that, you know, routines matter, getting ready for the game matter, all this stuff really matters. And I think that he's kind of going to bring that because that's just who he's been his whole career.
Caitlin, how much of all of this is about, obviously there are personnel changes on the coaching side, on the roster side, there are, we can talk about outbound pieces and things like that, but how much of this attitude shift do you think we can attribute to Vlad, Bo, and Manoah? Because even though those guys are still young in baseball years, they're not new to this team, and I do think that your best players are always going to some degree set the tone for that kind of stuff. Have you picked up on the change from those three in specific as well?
Yeah, I mean, well, Bo is always pretty locked in all the time. That's just how he is. But you know, I have heard from people around the Blue Jays saying that Vladdy's looked as focused as ever as well this year. You know, it feels like this team has gone through the tough times that they've gone through, whether it's missing the playoffs by one game or whether it's the way they went out last year, losing a big lead and getting swept. Like, I think they kind of have had those harsh realities kind of handed to them, and they kind of are more attuned to really what it's going to take this year. And it's going to take that level of focus. And so, yeah, I have seen that from them. You know, they do look locked in. I remember a couple games ago, I think he walked like three times or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's things like that where you're just kind of noticing like that they really do seem like they're hitting another level in terms of where they're at, their focus, their maturity, all their professionalism, their routines, all that kind of stuff.
I don't think spring training stats matter. Like, no offense to Yusei Kikuchi, unless you're trying something new, unless there's a reason behind perhaps the numbers. And Matt Chapman, apparently in his final year under team control, it was trying something new during spring training, and to very, I would say, limited results. Caitlin, like, how on your radar is Matt Chapman's offense to start the season?
Yeah, that's a tough one because I sort of align with you where I don't put too much stock into spring training results because, I don't know, sometimes you feel like you do and then it doesn't really translate to the season, and then some guys have a really rough spring and it really doesn't matter. And so, I mean, I still would lean on the side of I wouldn't be worried about Matt Chapman. As you say, he was trying some new things. I know he spent his off season sort of working on, you know, different swing things, and he worked with Bo and he's been, you know, trying to incorporate some of that stuff. So I don't know. I still probably have a feeling that Matt Chapman's going to find his stroke up there. He's probably going to look a lot like the guy that we saw last year. And so I would side on the, I don't know, not feeling very worried about Matt Chapman at this point. Maybe in May, we're still having this conversation, maybe you get a little worried, but at this point, you know, I don't think it's anything to be concerned about.
So instead of something to be concerned about, let's talk about something to be excited about. Up at The Athletic recently, you had your bold predictions for the Blue Jays season. And Caitlin, you did not skirt the definition of that piece. There were some bold predictions in there. I want to start with the Vlad one. First of all, as part of a 30-writer, 30-team thing at The Athletic, each team's leading MVP candidate, you tabbed Vlad in that, and you said that you think he'll be closer to 2021 than 2022, and then you gave a pretty whopping bold prediction for what you expect from Vlad this year. I will allow you to reveal that bold prediction for anyone who didn't read it and tell us a little bit about your thought process there.
Yeah, well, I said Vlad would hit 50 home runs. Honestly, the thought process wasn't too in-depth. It was just he's hit 48 in a season before. You know, and I know in that season they were playing in Buffalo and Dunedin, so smaller ballparks a little bit. I do think the Rogers Center new dimensions could favor him a little bit. I mean, he's pretty good at going to center, and I know that the wall's coming down there a little bit. It's going to be shorter. And then he can go the opposite way, too. And so I do think those dimensions are probably going to help a guy like him. And I kind of looked at his projections, I think, and I can't remember exactly what they were, but everything was sort of in the 30-ish home runs range, like upper 30s maybe at the high end. And so it seems to me that like 35 to 40 is kind of almost expected of him. And so if he's going to go above and beyond, it's got to be closer to 50. He has hit 48 in the season before. So I just thought, you know, 50 is a good round number. People like that number. And that's why I picked it.
I like it. I like it a lot. It would mean that the Blue Jays, I think, are closer to the ceiling of their season than the floor. And certainly he's shown he's pretty capable of reaching those heights. Kaitlin, congratulations. You survived spring training. On to the regular season. Thanks for this.
Of course. Thank you, guys.
This is Kaitlin McGrath of The Athletic. It's a big year for Vlad, honestly. At least as far as my talking about him. If he does do the 2021 thing, like if he puts up 50 home runs, if he has a season in a normal season, and this is no fault of his own that he played games in Dunedin.
Yeah, it's
and
not like
Buffalo.
We would have rather him not hit home runs in
no,
those
that
ballparks.
Was good. That was the best thing he could have done. But for me, and I don't think I'm alone, if he puts up a pretty similar season in 2023 to the one he did in 2022, and we get further and further and further away from that 2021, not season, first half, you start to solidify your opinion. And it doesn't mean that you can't change that later on in your career, but we're starting to gather a larger sample with Vlad. Because remember, it wasn't like, you know, there was a slow buildup to 2021. 2021, just like, that was an explosion. After similar results prior to that, to what we've seen, to what we saw last year, honestly. So if we're back to like between 800 and 900 OPS for Vlad, it's going to be hard for me to convince myself that, again, like an MVP type offensive season is within him.
I think that would be justified. I think there is a lot of reason for optimism still. Obviously, the discipline at the plate in terms of not striking out and having a good understanding of the strike zone. I thought maybe last year he, even with the low strikeout rate, tilted a little too over-aggressive earlier, over-aggressive 100%. With stuff that he couldn't drive.
Dude, you know, I think that's the entire issue with him, right?
Yeah,
it's like walks are a byproduct. I heard Blair and Barker talking about him trying to take more walks, or there's a thought process that maybe, and Kaitlin even referenced the three-walk day. It's like those aren't, you don't go into plate appearances intending to take walks, but like you should be spitting on those borderline pitches. And because you're Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you should be getting those calls.
And there's an element too of, you know, spitting on those pitches. Like it does take you deeper into counts, but if you truly believe in your ability, and this was always the tough thing with Bo Bichette, because he's such a good early count hitter, but he's also like a really good bat to ball guy. If he gets down to two strikes,
right,
is you should be confident that if you spit on it and you don't get the call, you're still alive in that plate appearance. And it's, you know, it's not as simple as lay off something you can hit for something you can drive. But I do think Vlad's approach last year sometimes was more like a guy who gets his value from being a 300 hitter and not a guy who gets his value from hitting 48 home runs. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I'll be looking for early on is, you know, that walk rate a little bit, because it is one of the earliest stats to stabilize. Like, we don't need a lot of plate appearances to be like, okay, this is how often this guy's going to walk. Power in a new ballpark and when home runs are, you know, they don't happen as often, is going to be a little tougher to see. But it's also, you know, it's not as simple as this, but you know, knowing like average launch angle or something like that for Vlad is super helpful, because even with the ground ball profile last year, like nobody hits the ball as hard that low as him. It's him and Giancarlo.
Yeah.
And that's it. So if he can start turning those into, you know, whether it's stuff to the opposite field power alley or just, you know, turn some of those ground balls into line drives that get over the shortstop's head, the path to Vlad being the exact same player at the plate and just being way better, like it's not a difficult path. It just needs to get tweaked just a little bit, because that guy is still there.
Yeah.
And I think it's coming back.
No, and it's taking,
I don't know,
those
about
borderline pitches.
I don't know about 50 home runs coming back. I do love how bold Caitlin was with that prediction, but I do think Vlad, I think better things are ahead than last year.
Josh Towers ahead as the Fan Drive Time continues.